This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Knapp. The lawyer arguing against provisions in Arizona's anti-immigration law said that if the U.S. Supreme Court upholds SB 1070, there would be a mass incarceration of Latinos. And Arizona Governor Jan Brewer, who had signed the proposed legislation into law in 2010, agreed as she stood on the courthouse steps after argument that incarceration of Arizona's estimated 400,000 undocumented immigrants was up for consideration if the highest court lifted the block on SB 1070.
During oral argument on SB 1070 by the High Court, Justice Scalia cynically suggested mass incarceration could be avoided by simply deporting these people. And in the one-hour argument, both conservative and liberal justices expressed skepticism to the challenges to the Arizona law, filling immigrants and immigration advocates with apprehension.
Meanwhile, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, Indiana, and Utah have proposed or enacted similar legislation and await the court's ruling expected in June. We'll parse out the arguments and discuss what's at stake for the various immigrant groups throughout the country, and indeed the fabric of democracy in the country. Isabel Garcia, co-chair of the Coalición de Derechos Humanos, the human rights coalition based in Tucson, Arizona, and Foster Mayer, senior litigation counsel of Latino Justice, PERLDEF, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
And Isabel, how are things today in Arizona? Oh, God.
Well, things are hot.
Things are hot here. Is that politically and physically?
Yes.
Well, actually, why don't we begin with some of what happened before the Supreme Court? Before we went on the air, I was telling both Isabel and Foster that I was filled with just enormous trepidation by the court. But what I want to do, or the court's reaction to the federal government, the core of what is before the Supreme Court now is the injunction, the stay imposed by the United States District Court Judge Susan Bolton, the lower court, which blocked several key parts of the anti-immigration law from going into effect. What are some of those four main provisions that have been enjoined from going into effect? Foster?
Sure. The one that everyone knows about is the one about papers, please, that requires that a police officer, if they have a suspicion that someone may not have status, that requires them to inquire and to require of the person that they document their status. That's the most glaring of the four provisions that just has caught everybody's attention because of its obvious problems that it raises. Quickly moving on, it also criminalizes status, not having immigration status. The federal scheme is that it's not a criminal crime. It's not a crime. It's just a civil violation. Arizona makes it a crime. And the third provision, failure to carry papers, immigration papers, that becomes a crime under Arizona law, even though it's not under federal law. The fourth one is a little more complicated, and I won't explain right now. But the underlying question that faces the court is, what's the relationship between the federal government, that's supposed to be in charge of immigration policy, and states and localities? And the court, we fear, will take this occasion on these couple of issues, law enforcement and criminality and what a state can do, and is really going to rewrite the book as to what states and localities can do. And so they're going to not be limited to sort of the narrow issues in front of it, is what we fear.
Isabel, we should say that those are just four components of SB 1070. There are already aspects of 1070 that are in effect. What's happening on the ground with the immigrant populations in Arizona?
Thank you, Mimi. As you are probably aware, 1070 didn't just come out of the blue. Arizona has been on this road to become the laboratory of everything that is anti-immigrant, beginning in the mid-90s when they decided to funnel everybody through Arizona. And indeed, we did become a state of hate, eventually passing 1070. Prior to 1070, and of course since 1070, even since the injunction of some of the portions, our community has been under siege. All of you probably know about Joe Arpaio, just 2 hours north of us. He is on a campaign of terror against our community. But even here in Tucson, Arizona, the more liberal spot of the state, we have been living 1070. As Foster indicated, 1070 actually makes it a crime for you not to have papers. A state crime, that means you would get jailed in a county jail, and there'd be a complaint, State of Arizona versus Isabel Garcia. What we have is not that. What we have is the police policy that says if in a stop, whatever investigation you're involved in, you have reasonable suspicion, same as 1070, reasonable suspicion that the person's in violation of federal policies, you can detain them and call the Border Patrol or ICE and 20 minutes to pick them up. And, of course, we have cases where they've waited an hour or what have you. So, in effect, we continue to live that. And it looks as if the Supreme Court is saying that that's okay. It looks like they're not going to approve the new state crime. Why? Because, you know, then that would cause enormous restructuring of budgets. We would have to dedicate significant portions, even more so than now, of portions to create jails, to create new courts, to actually prosecute these crimes. So what they'd like is not have to do that, but okay the provision that says that police officers, in enforcing whatever else law they're doing, they have reasonable suspicion, and that's the key. What is reasonable suspicion? We have been engaged with the Tucson Police Department for almost 20 years on what is reasonable suspicion, and we are still not satisfied. They still have the same language, and they all flounder when you ask them what are the articulable objective criteria. And even in this case, I think Pierce, in one of his diatribes, stated, well, we went through a list. If you look dirty, if you avoid the look, if you look, I mean, you are caught in a catch-22. And the court refused, as you heard, refused to hear the issue of racial profiling because they pretend that because there is an injunction that somehow this is not happening already.
Well, what you say falls on receptive ears. Everything you say is just absolutely 100% true. We actually, in working on the case, we filed an amicus on the 1070 case, found that list that you may be familiar that was off a tape, a training tape, and it had such things. How do you tell someone doesn't have status? Well, how about demeanor? Well, what does demeanor mean? Unexplained nervousness, erratic behavior, refusal to make eye contact, or dress, or riding in a car with a lot of people, or location. You're hanging out with other people who look like you. So the training itself, it makes it clear that this will lead to racial profiling, and it's just a frightening, you know, to let the local police there. And just to go back to the Supreme Court for a second, the federal law knew when they drafted the federal immigration scheme, they knew that localities in charge of immigration would be a disaster, that they would discriminate. And that was part of the explicit reason they had no localities get involved in this stuff. And yet when asked in the argument, does this have to do with racial profiling, the United States government said, yeah, no, it doesn't. And it's unbelievable for someone who has looked into this and the purposes behind the immigration law and why they don't allow states and localities to do it is because it will lead to racial profiling.
Right. And I just thought it was breathtaking that the Supreme Court of this land would not look at something that has been given to the federal government. I mean, they're the only jurisdiction that can determine immigration laws. I mean, that is very settled law, and what they have done just in their arguments and statements is going against all the settled law in the particular area. The other thing that really bothered me is that there seemed to be absolutely no recognition, but there seemed to be no recognition or discussion at all about what it means to be an undocumented immigrant. Half of the people, or maybe less than half, actually crossed the border in violation of the federal law that says you must cross through a port of entry. Half of the other people simply violated an administrative regulation, and yet they spoke of all of them as if they were in the second bunch. You know, of course, that's not such a heinous crime either, especially when we've encouraged Mexicans to come for decades and decades at a time. But if you want to be technical about it, and I think they should be, is that I found no discussion on either our side, the government arguing, or the justices recognizing that only half of them are in violation of a criminal law, the illegal entry, that they entered unlawfully at a place not a port of entry. The rest have simply overstayed their visas, and yet he compared them to, you know, the bank robbery statutes, how there can be concurrent jurisdiction and the disease coming into the jurisdiction. I mean, it was really rather insulting. And the comment about, well, do you want us to, you know, ask Mexico about our laws? Or I thought that was quite insulting and demeaning as well.
Some of the other points we made in our Latino Justice Pearl Def, the brief that we submitted as an amicus, touched on a couple of things that I'm curious what seems to be going on the ground. Not only the racial profiling that will come out of the passage, you know, the implementation of this law, but the fact that it really encourages, that legitimizes racial animus, particularly towards Hispanics. It sort of gives a green light to people in day-to-day. We have stories also out of Alabama. We were in Alabama where teachers all of a sudden feel it's okay to denigrate Mexicans and tell the kids, you're going to be going back soon anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Whether you've heard stories like that of late, and or just people also the community, Hispanic community, afraid to go get the essential benefits or to go to school or other terror that has that is in there is created to stop people from getting the benefits and be able to do what they should be able to do in their day-to-day life.
Absolutely. The socialization is almost even worse than the actual, legalization of this. You know, it's just the discussion, as you've stated, the discussions alone leading up to 1070 and after have given even people who we thought were pretty decent, reasonable people, all of a sudden this sense of wanting to question people's citizenship and whether, I mean, we've had decent, reasonable people say, well, should we grant citizenship just because you're born here? I mean, the discussion alone has resulted in school principals demanding papers wrongfully, like you say, teachers making discriminatory statements to their own students. At the medical offices, some of the nurses and other personnel making incredible statements that we had not heard for a very long time here in Arizona.
You know, I can go even further. What has been conjured up for me was the Fugitive Slave Pass Act in this country. I think about the Chinese Exclusion Act, the Japanese internment, and I certainly think about Jews in Nazi era being forced to wear yellow stars, or I could go to the apartheid area, Bantustan areas. They're all reminiscent of this exclusionary, xenophobic response to workers, essentially, seeking to live their lives in the artificial construct of borders. But I was particularly filled with trepidation by what is really 130 years of black letter, clear, distinct law, going back to Alexander Hamilton and James Madison. And suddenly we have this conservative court, by and large, that says, no, we're not the activists who are really giving consideration to the issue of a determined precedential area of law, i.e. that the feds have control over the immigration enforcement policies and statutes being overturned. So right now, Kagan has recused herself. So we, at best, wind up with a 4-4. So what exactly are we expecting from the court? Will they carve out some special area for border states to enact their own legislation? Or is this free-for-all for states' rights with all of these states like Indiana and Utah, et cetera, waiting in the wings to enact copycat laws of SB 1070. Should I be as frightened as I am?
Oh, you should be more frightened than you are,
I'm sure.
That's
very encouraging, Faust.
But just to touch on the thing about precedent, there is no split of authority. There is no court, district or no circuit courts that have upheld this type of law enforcement law. And yet here's the Supreme Court very likely going to do it. There isn't any split of authority. Usually a Supreme Court doesn't take a case until there's a split of authority within the circuit. So the fact that they're even taking this case mm-hmm. with the result that we all fear is just beyond belief. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that, we're lawyers and we thought that there would be a particular position taken here that was taken by the federal court here, by the Ninth Circuit, and yet we're seeing that this Supreme Court, contrary to its, statements that they are strict constructionists and rail against activist judges, I cannot remember a case where they are clearly going outside of precedent and outside of reality. I know that it's not an issue before the Supreme Court as to how we got where we are. However, we cannot take things out of context. And the context is that we have millions of undocumented people here because we depend on them, because we've encouraged them to come, because we've implemented policies that have forced them to come. I mean, one only needs to realize that NAFTA, that of course they argued would resolve the immigration issues, has resulted in the displacement of 6 million workers in Mexico, somehow tied to agriculture, and they have lost their jobs, their inability to, raise their families based on agriculture, a highly agricultural society, and they have come across the country unlawfully. Somehow, none of our responsibility is weighed there. And on the other hand, they do talk about, poor Arizona, the federal government hasn't done anything. Well, I submit that the federal government is very guilty. I know that this federal government is fighting a 1070, but the federal government has to acknowledge its role in creating this very situation here in Arizona. In fact, their lawyer, Donald Verrilli, I don't believe, I'm very sorry to say, did not argue our case the way it should have been argued, did not bring out certain arguments and did not counter certain arguments made by Mr. Clement.
And Foster, if this is upheld by the Supreme Court, if Arizona is allowed to proceed on all or part of these issues, what are the likely consequences come June or whenever that happens?
Is this about 400,000 people potentially? Mm-hmm. Seriously, which Jan Brewer said she was willing to do, mass incarceration?
Again, I fear that not only will the Supreme Court simply say this is okay, but they're going to have to rewrite kind of the underlying law about the role of immigration between state and local. So I'm afraid they're going to really just open the barn door and lay out some principles that will just, be catastrophic, that they'll allow Alabama, where we've done work, that law makes Arizona look almost tame. I mean, there you can't have any contact with the government. It's a crime to have contact with the government if you don't have status, no business relationship, no contracts are enforceable, education system. I mean, everything is being cut off. So I'm afraid the Supreme Court's going to go there, and it's going to, be one of, a very, I'm afraid, traumatic historic moment.
The hell with due process and the hell and, with and, equal protection.
And I'm afraid that the federal government will step forward with all of the cries to, be anti-immigrant, that they will step forward and again commit unprecedented resources to hire even more agents so that they can help the states figure out who's documented or not. I mean, we are really on a slippery slope where we don't have infrastructure, we don't have quality education, health care, jobs, on and on. The American public and all of us are suffering, and yet we are going to continue this path of of criminalization and militarization, you know, that's the most expensive route of all. And if they intend to do what they've done in Tucson, and of course they're spreading it to Alabama and Lee and everywhere, pretty soon you will have a federal court that is going to spend millions upon millions prosecuting people for unlawful entry and prosecuting people for other myriad of laws that are going to come about, like we did in Arizona. It's Arpaio said, I don't need 1070. I have an employer sanctions law that helps me. I have a aggravated identity theft statute that, you know, goes after people who work with fictitious Social Security numbers. Imagine paying taxes and paying Social Security that I will benefit from, they will never benefit from, but we're prosecuting them for this. And so that will go, you know, on the increase. And so where do we stop? Where do we stop? And I believe that we're not going to stop until people in this country realize what the history of immigration is and really begin to ask those questions about why is it that people are here. Because until we get to the root cause of the situation, we can put as many police and many agents anywhere, and families will still want to reunite with each other. Starvation will propel the human being to continue to survive.
The only good thing about this is I think the decision will be so dramatic that it will help galvanize people to realize that something needs to be done from a progressive point of view on this immigration issue, because it's going to be obvious.
And I can say that some of the real spark of political organizing and social activism in this country has come from immigrant communities throughout this country. People will not live in fear and terror. The extraordinary democracy and workplace rights that immigrant communities are bringing to us. So, Isabel Garcia, thank you for all of the work that you do in Tucson and Foster Mayor. Thank you for your litigation throughout the country, really, on these critical issues. And we'll continue to keep a close eye on SB 1070 and what the Supreme Court has to say. And, of course, the fight back. Thank you both.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Land of opportunity, freedom, and equality. I'm just trying to be free, they want to bottle me. We're all victims to the immigration policy. We need change, you can save the apology. We need help in Arizona calls. Things won't improve with the Arizona law. Give us the strength to battle through it all. Cause when we're strong, that's when paranoia falls. Rich get rich, the poor get poor. And greed for the money is the root of it all. At the same time, they control us with fear. It seems that nobody cares. Yo, the rich get rich and the poor get poor. The greed for the money is the root of it all. At the same time, they control us with fear. But it seems that nobody cares. Yeah.
And now Brave New Films presents Immigrants for Sale.
In the state of Arizona, this is legalized racial profiling.
The detention of migrants is a multi-billion dollar industry.
One in which immigrants are traded like products.
They are for sale to the highest bidder.
Who benefits and who profits? Corrections Corporation of America, or CCA, the GEO Group, and the Management and Training Corporation combined own over 200 facilities in the nation.
With over 150,000 bed spaces for a total profit of close to $5 billion per year.
Private prisons profit like a hotel. The more occupants that go in, the more money comes out.
You just sell it like you're selling cars, or real estate, or hamburgers.
Private prisons rely on anti-immigrant laws that guarantee them access to fresh inmates.
Here's how they do it. The American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, is an extreme right-wing membership organization comprised of state legislators and powerful multinational corporations, including the Corrections Corporation of America.
ALEC is the most active private prison lobbyist group pushing for anti-immigrant laws like Arizona's SB 1070.
Russell Pierce, like CCA, is an ALEC member, one with obscure ties to national white separatist neo-Nazi groups. During an ALEC meeting, CCA and Pierce crafted a model legislation that became, almost word for word, Arizona's SB 1070.
Whether people are undocumented or not doesn't matter.
As long as they fill the detention facilities for days, months, or even years.
SB 1070 and their copycat laws sprouting up across the country represent the perfect money machine.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.